You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are and wherever you happen to be right now all around this gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and you're going to be glad you tuned in. I promise you that. One of the things that we always do here on the show right at the beginning is remind everyone, if you haven't subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do. And it baffles me why you wouldn't, because it's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't share your email address with anybody. So go over to kevinsmithshow.com. You'll see in red letters, you can't miss it, it says K-Files E-Zine. That's it. Click there and subscribe, and then you will no longer be out of the loop. There's really no reason for you to be out of the loop, is there? I can't think of one. Not a good reason anyway. You know, the Hadron Collider that is going online over in, I believe it's Switzerland, and they're going to attempt to create miniature black holes. There are some scientists that are beginning to come out with articles saying, don't do it. It's dangerous. It's far, far too dangerous. A couple of them have come out with an article that actually predict that if they create a black hole, even miniature, it would be capable of consuming the Earth within 50 years. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But it's certainly the kind of thing that would make a good movie. And, you know, if you're going to do it, if you're a movie producer and you're going to do it, you better hurry. Don't think about it too long, because they may create a black hole that's hungrier than that. And we'll be gone in a flash. It could happen. And maybe. Catastrophes. Big, big catastrophes are happening on a rather regular scale around the Earth. I guess you've heard about the cyclone that hit Myanmar. For those of you who are as old as dirt, you'll remember that Myanmar used to be called Burma. Those of you who are not old as dirt only know it as Myanmar if you know it at all. 30,000 people, it is estimated, are dead. 30,000. As a result of this hurricane, we call it on this side of the planet, cyclone is what they call it over there, and you know that's a mind boggler. They're saying about 30,000 people have died as a result of that cyclone. Would you call that a major catastrophe? I certainly would. Big, big catastrophes seem to be happening on a regular basis. And we're going to be talking tonight about that. We're going to be talking about catastrophes and the future and what's coming or what may be coming. We're going to be talking with Dr. Dan Burrish and Dr. Marcia McDowell. very controversial figures, to say the least. But do you really want pablum? We'll be back. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can, right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008.
The Kevin Smith Show, unique in the galaxy.
This is a show that you've been waiting for. I've received over the last couple of years, actually, emails from people asking me to get Dr. Dan Burish on the show. You've wanted to hear from him. You've wanted to be able to call in with your questions or comments. And we finally have been able to arrange that. His schedule and ours have coincided, and he is with us tonight along with Dr. Marcia McDowell. And let me just begin by welcoming you, Dr. Dan Burish, to the Kevin Smith Show, and you, Dr. McDowell, to the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you.
Thank you very much for inviting us, Kevin.
Why don't we do this? Because we have new listeners all the time, and we have people joining us and listening who are new to the whole genre, and it's a whole new world for them. So they would not be familiar with you, and that seems a little bit hard to believe, but they're just now coming to this, so they don't know. Why don't we start, Dr. Burish, with just a thumbnail sketch of who you are, what your background is, and then we'll move on from there.
Very well. First of all, I'm a retired professional microbiologist. I was a senior operative and scientist responsible first to the Committee of the Majority and the Majestic 12 from 1986, when I was actually inducted while attending the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, all the way till 2003, and then from 2003 to 2005 only to the Majestic 12 after the more internationalized Committee of the Majority became defunct. Subsequently, on October the 12th of 2005, the Majestic 12 adjourned, giving me a final set of orders. Now, during that interim, I was also assigned and responded to a black operations unit within the United States government, which was deployed within the International Coalition Zone of Operations for Gulf War I, which was Desert Storm. And I was there for the purpose of counteracting a rogue military unit's intended application of a biological warfare agent to the Iraqi army. This was all done under extremely hush-hush conditions as a portion or an offshoot of what was called Operation Night Strike. The chopper I was on was hit with enemy fire, an RPG, and it crashed, and luckily I survived the incident and was responsible for some close combat during that incident, but thank God I survived. Following that time, I was gradually promoted to the position of Microbiologist 5 at the Papoose Lake Facility S4, and I operated as a working group leader on Project Aquarius R2. As a working group leader, I was responsible for the investigation of an extraterrestrial entity's neuropathy, a so-called J-rod, or what a lot of folks are calling grays. That neuropathy was called a thermal hysteresis problem. He had a denervation or a problem with his nerves in his extremities, which was not allowing small glands to secrete alpha antifreeze glycoproteins. And in so doing, they were getting cold. They were suffering from hypothermia. So part of my responsibilities was to assist him. And I should note here that I'm not talking about an alien. I'm talking about an extraterrestrial of human lineage. In the late 1990s, Marcia and myself published Eagles Disobey the Case for Inca City Mars. This was a known, according to the Committee of the Majority, and they in fact ordered me not to be involved with it. I didn't understand at the time why they did not want me involved in it. The reason why they did not want me involved in it is because of some of what we were seeing from the surface of Mars actually had to do with a paradox that we can discuss if you like. But in any case, my academic credentials from the East Coast were attacked, and then they were ultimately restored by an intervention of an extremely private religious order based in France, and my credentials can be verified if one writes to Marcia McDowell at yahoo.com and requests a verification of those credentials. In 2005, for a very short time, I sat as a pro tem member on the Majestic 12 as MJ number 9, and I was finally assigned as what was called H1 Madge, which was the designated person to disclose. I was actually ordered to disclose the fact that the extraterrestrials are of human lineage, that it was, in fact, a time travel paradox involving the human species. I completed those orders on September of 2006, and I am, in fact, retired from service. I work exclusively now. I function as a chief scientist for the Eagles Disobey Research Consortium, only for Marcia. I'm exclusive to her by contract, and I do that stuff that she requests I do, plus some other biological research as my health permits. I've got a couple health issues, a heart condition and a seizure condition, which are both of extremely prosaic origin. And that's about me.
Okay. Marcia, if you will, give us a thumbnail about you.
A thumbnail? Oh, my gosh. All right. I was actually born in Canada and naturalized almost immediately. And consequently, I'm holding dual citizenship, which is rather enjoyable. I've been down here in the United States since, oh, gosh, the late 70s. And in the early 80s, I had occasion, because of my family connections, to be in Europe. And I actually met Dan for the very first time. It was at a party. He was there as a student working with Dr. Bunyan at the time on cancer research at his laboratory. And many years passed after that, and I met him again in the early 1990s, recognized him. We got to talking and found out more about what he was involved with, and I began to take an active interest in seeing if there was any way to get him made available to speak to the public, because he was under such a very severe type of a lockdown as far as information goes. And I became kind of a thorn in the side of Majestic for quite some time. During that time, I completed my bachelor's and my master's degrees, and was working here in Las Vegas. I assisted Dan working on Eagles Disobey, the case for Inca City Mars. I wrote under the name of B.J. Wolf. And I kind of encapsulated the, you know, the way that we met. I tried to make it a little bit more succinct because you can't be stretching things out too far in a book like that or people won't be, you know, prone to read it. So I encapsulated everything and brought out a great deal about Dan's contact and his work in Black Ops, much to the frustration of Majestic 12. And they were absolutely furious. Eventually, I ended up returning back to Canada, and I was approached in the late summer, early fall of 2003, and actively given an offer to offer you can't refuse one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To join up with Majestic and work directly with Dan. They had something in mind. I wasn't quite sure what it was. I thought I was being kidnapped. And I landed a few good blows before I finally was calmed down and realized that it was Majestic and not something insidious. I accepted the offer and returned to the United States and began working directly with Dan. And then I was given the set of orders that I relayed to Dr. Burrish and actually to his wife, Deborah, to indicate that he was to go forward and disclose his experiences with respect to the extraterrestrial entity that people know as J-Rod to the public, and that we were given the authorization and authority to go forward and do that, and a timetable upon which to complete the orders. We worked together on that, completed the first DVD, which is called Tell the World, and pretty much the rest is history. People have polarized. People who demanded to hear Dr. Burrish's account, suddenly when they heard it, it wasn't quite to their liking. It didn't mesh with something that they thought it would be, I suppose, and they polarized. People either really, really appreciated hearing Dan, hearing his honesty, hearing him talk about what actually happened, or they polarized into a very negative camp. So, as I say, here we are.
Well, it's been quite a rocky ride. It's been a bit of a roller coaster for you.
Yeah.
As I was researching, as you know, because we communicated about it via email, as I was researching, getting ready for this show, I encountered the polarization you talk about. I encountered lots of articles that are very, very positive and supportive. I also encountered articles that were very, very nasty. And by nasty, I don't just mean negative. I mean they were really nasty.
Well, they were below the belt hits even. I mean, they even became furious when it was learned that I had been granted my doctorate in music through the same institution which restored Dan's doctorate.
Mm-hmm. I believe one of the things that was asked was, why does she need a doctorate? Well, I encountered some of this with one of the negative camps, and I politely informed them that ladies nowadays are permitted to receive them if they earn them. You know, yes, wake up call, duh, right?
Well, look, among those who are negative as well as among people who support your work, there will always be a certain number of knuckle draggers. You know, they don't get it.
I haven't heard that term for a while.
Yeah.
Funny, that got me.
You know, I had to change because I was accustomed to calling them intellectual mudsuckers, and I used it so often that people complained that I said it too much. So now they're knuckle draggers. Okay. All right.
Right.
You've done quite a bit of work having to do with time and catastrophes and probabilities and what's coming. One of the things that is of very, very high interest among the Kevin Smith Show audience is this 2012 Now, we've had guests on that tell us it's going to be a tough time. We've had guests on that tell us it's going to be massively catastrophic. We've had guests who have told us that it's going to be a flurry in the wind. It's not going to be that big a deal, but there will be changes. So,
as you said, 30,000 is not no big deal.
Yeah, that's not a flurry in the wind, but that was a heck of a wind, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, look, these are, we are led to believe, are isolated incidents. But these isolated incidents keep happening. What's the deal?
Well, there's an instability being invoked, if you will, into the global biosphere as we speak. A portion of the instability has to do with longer cycles, the precession of the equinox and all of that Mayan calendar business that your listeners have heard about. There are also shorter-term cycles, shorter-term instabilities, and also anthropogenic instabilities, those instabilities, those additions to our biosphere, which are being added by humankind, the global warming issue. And all of these are coming to play, they're coming to focus, if you will, right now. And this is part of the Mayan prophecy that we would have a tough time. It's not going to be a simple walk in the park, simple blow in the wind. It's going to be a tough time, and we will emerge from it. We will emerge from it successfully. That's the information that I am personally privy to. However, there is another side to this. Now, if we want to talk about probabilities here for a second, the probability given to us through technology, which was actually time-seeking quantum technology, called the Looking Glass, was that there was only a 19% probability of a major worldwide disaster, and I say only because we're talking about 81% probability of not, of a disaster called T2, which would kill up to 5/6 of the human population. The origin, the design, if you will, the mechanism of that catastrophe was the production of ancient Sumerian technology on the Earth, including the Looking Glass, but also Stargate or transport pod technologies. Those technologies have been since outlawed and destroyed, and if anything is turned on worldwide which matches the radio or EMF or thermal signature of that technology, militaries from a number of countries coordinate, they strike and destroy it immediately, or as quickly as what we can get to it. The situation is this. If these technologies were allowed to proceed, then the time travelers' own histories would have been justified. The disequilibrium in our system, in our universe, which produced the paradox due to time travel itself, would have actually been justified, and we would have proceeded off onto their history. Rather than doing that, the groups such as the Majestic 12, and I say such as because it was only one of a number of groups, stepped in to prevent it. Since the time of my first mentioning this, there have been large bodies of water found in the Earth's mantle. Those large bodies of water were actually partial to the T2 catastrophe, which we are now not expecting. We've also seen in the BBC News work having to do with the possible split between different portions of the human species. And in fact, the J-Rods, the Greys, and the Orions, or the tall white Orions, as they've been called, were in fact two halves or two parts of the human species, which would have justified, if you will, if they were to come about, justify their own history. It's difficult talking about time travel. Now, the situation as we face it is this. Last October, we began encountering data from the sun which matched what we learned was variation or variant number 83 of timeline 1, which is the non-catastrophic timeline. Now, when I say non-catastrophic, I don't mean that we're not going to have a hard time. It simply means that 5/6 of the human population isn't going to die. When this happened, we were then able to lock in and find out what the expectancies were for the world. Well, this caused a further division within the new group that took over after the Majestic 12 adjourned in 2005. It was the suggestion of several to apply a policy called the third rail. The third rail, of course, on a train track is the electromotive or the electrified.
The electrified one.
Rail. And what was done was, and is still being done, is there are those in governments attempting to move us off from the variant from timeline 1, variant 83, to an unknown. One of the people who was involved in this fell last year, and she fell in Pakistan. Her name was Benazir Bhutto. There are others who are entering into the more public focus at this moment, candidates and things like that, and people like that who are aware that this could be happening. Now, I think we need to parse out here for a moment the difference between the Mayan calendar and what we're experiencing. The Mayans wrote in cycles, and they wrote from the end of their calendar forward. We're ending the time of the Jaguar. If you go to www.eaglesdisobey.net, which is the real Eagles Disobey website, the one real Eagles Disobey website, and you go down a ways on the website, you will find an area which is, I'm scanning down now, called More Cool Stuff from the Eagles Team. And you'll see a thing that says the Age of the Jaguar. Now remember, in prophecies, we're supposed to see things in the sun, the moon, and the stars. Well, take a look at what we've captured in the solar corona from the SOHO. If that is not what looks like a jaguar, you've got me. We are entering that time when the age of the jaguar is ending and the birth of a new sun is beginning. So we're going to have instabilities, we're going to have uproars, we're going to have problems in our world, but we need to focus upon unity. Why? One of the observations which was made by the Looking Glass was that when we did not, when we further fractured, when the spiritual consensus, that consciousness amongst the human population became fractured from itself, that actually promoted the further fracturing of the human race. And thus, we have said, focus upon unity for humanity. And in fact, my orders were that my message would be for the unity of humanity during the time of the cycle's cross. So, Kevin, yes, we are facing tough times, and yes, we will face it together. But no, there will not be a worldwide, as in a single worldwide catastrophe. We are perturbing our environment. We are perturbing our grandmother Earth. And she's going to kick back.
Wow. I'll tell you, I'm sitting here jotting notes. Questions I've got now. We're about 1 minute from break.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
In 1 minute. Can you tell me, is 2012 the correct date?
You broke off for a second. Is 2012 what?
The correct date.
2012 is, as far as I am aware, the correct date for the change of the Mayan calendar, the present world that we are in, the Itzapa calendar. That is not the correct date for the so-called catastrophe, if that were to occur. That ranges anywhere between 1980 to 2016, with the probabilistic time, which was calculated by the Brotherhood of Fulcanelli, between 1992 and 2012. But again, we're not expecting the T2 catastrophe to occur because of the data that we received, the accurate data from the Looking Glass. And I say accurate because we've done hundreds of thousands of hours of analysis and then retesting of the data.
All right, I hate to cut us off, but the mics are going dead here in just a few seconds. Folks, we'll be back on the other side of this break. More with Dr. Dan Burish and Dr. Marcia McDowell. All right, we are back. Very quickly, let me remind you again, if you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do during this show. If you're looking at the player, you're listening to the show right now, you've got the player open. Well, over on the left side, there are some buttons, and one of them says K-Files. Click it and subscribe, all right? All right, my guest this evening, Dr. Dan Burish, Dr. Marcia McDowell, and you left us with a whole lot of things to think about here. Let's talk about the Looking Glass for just a moment. You've mentioned that a couple of times. Let's go into that just a little bit for those who have not heard you previously talk about that.
All right. The Looking Glass device is a back-engineered from a transport device of ancient Sumerian origin. The device was several feet in diameter, set within a ring, and they're usually operated in twos, two nodes. You can only hear sound through it if there were two nodes, and I'm not a physicist. I cannot explain why, but it was basically a large donut just set up with an electromagnetic torus shape. Within that donut, there was a barrel which was injected with liquid argon gas, which was then spun, and electromagnetic focusing rings in a projection unit from underneath, an energy projection unit. That would then open up a quantum probability. We would then see and listen to that quantum probability. The closer that we would get to a particular time that we were attempting to view, the more the probabilities would begin crossing over onto themselves, to the extent that when we got close to at the end of 2005, for instance, at that time frame, the probabilities for the 2012 time frame were so close to one another that they were overlaid and had to be deinterlaced by computer. And that's where the variance come from. And for instance, I mentioned variant number 83. And the real gift of information from this is that it's not the calendar, it's not the Mayan calendar, it's the energetic space in which we're traveling that that we're encountering right now. That's the actual change that we're encountering.
To kind of bring this point home a little bit, the electromagnetic aberrations around us, the activity, the micro wormholes, the very active space that we're traveling through at this moment in time, this is part and parcel of the problem that would have created the catastrophe had we been moving in that general direction. The use of the Looking Glass technology, the use of the pod technology or the transport technology that was basically being refined and developed over the last many, many years, was the essential problem, because when these technologies were in place, according to the history of the J-Rod history, shall we say, when these were in place and we moved through this energetic space, it tended to be like a lightning rod, and it would ground the energy into the planet. Well, as we go through the space normally, without the addition of the man-made devices, we don't take enough energy into the planet to do the catastrophic damage that is in their history. But when those devices were available and active, then they would act as a lightning rod, taking in too much energy into the planet and thus creating the destabilization.
That's right. And that destabilization, should they have been allowed to remain, would have resulted in a geophysical, not an electromagnetic, because the electromagnetic pole shifts have gone on since time immemorial.
A
geophysical pole shift of 4 degrees or more, which would have inundated a lot of the planet with the oceans. And that's what would have resulted in the mass deaths. But again, we're not seeing any indication of that now, but we are seeing an indication of a tough road to hoe ahead.
Right. Now, of course, this a lot of this took place, the decommissioning of all of these devices and the destruction of many of these devices, or the people who have turned them over to governments to destroy. This took place because, essentially, the communication from the J-Rods from 52,000 years in our future, who weren't trying to facilitate their own history. They were trying to give information so that we could avoid the catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
So once we took that information, we said this information might enable us to move forward in a unified fashion and avoid the catastrophe. That's when we embraced that and began to decommission them. Now that they're decommissioned, we are now looking at an 85% probability that we are going to be not facing a catastrophic catastrophe.
Right, and it was an 85 confidence level
to be mathematically correct. I misspoke. Excuse me.
Well, that's fine. You're a musician. I'm a scientist,
and I
can't do what you do. It was an 85% confidence level. It has to do with confidence intervals and statistics. 85% confidence level that it would only occur with a 19% probability, with an 81% probability that it would not occur. When we entered into the time at the start of last October, and you weren't privy to this, Marcia, because I was pulled away for that purpose that you are aware.
Yeah, right.
The variant 83 was locked in to around that same percentage that you mentioned, around the 85%. So you actually didn't misspeak. It was just a categorical issue. The 85% is where we're setting right now, 85% non-occurrence. And that's a pretty good percent, but at the same time, we need to look at ourselves and ask ourselves what prudent things that we should do to prepare for the times ahead. And the prudent things are not panicking, they're not digging in and going into bunkers or anything like that. The prudent things are looking at where we're living. Are we living near the oceans? We're expecting the seas to rise. Look at the south of India. The seas are rising right now, and certain islands are going underwater because of the thermal expansion from the oceans. So we do need to look at things to prudently keep ourselves safe. Look at what's going on right now on the west coast of North America.
Mm-hmm.
There is rumbling up and down the west coast of North America and even in South America now. So we need to begin taking those steps to prudently ask ourselves what we would do if, for instance, we live in an earthquake zone along a subduction area and the earthquake occurs. But these things do not include some of the more panicking responses that I've heard of buying disaster shelters.
Wait a minute, those tin shelters that people are talking about that are supposed to withstand, 1,200 mile an hour winds?
Right.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. the T2 event, meaning the 4 degree or more shift, geophysical shift, is not expected to occur.
No.
And that's just slightly above 85% that it will not occur. However, what is going to happen anyway, we need to ask ourselves. And what is going to happen anyway is what's happening today. Kevin, you mentioned Myanmar, the former Burma, and I remember the name Burma, so I must be older than dirt.
That's at least as old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was born the year right after they invented dirt.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah. You're slightly to my senior then. but we need to, you know, seriously expect larger perturbations to the atmosphere, and those perturbations will come in the forms of the cyclones, the hurricanes, the earthquakes, and the resultant potentials for tsunamis. And who doesn't know about a tsunami now after what happened down in Banda Aceh?
Oh my goodness!
Oh yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
We
hear a lot about I can't think of the name of the volcano, Las Palmas,
right?
That if it caves in, we're going to have 300-foot waves hitting New York City.
Yes, the one right off from Africa.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Off the coast of Africa.
Was it?
What sort of probability is there in that?
In again, you broke off, sir. In what?
Yeah. What sort of probability would there be in that? In the.
You're talking about Las Palmas. I have not seen the data. I have not seen the data on that. However, we are more than due, according to current geology, more than due for an event in Cascadia, mm-hmm. Off the northwestern section of North America. Mm-hmm. That Cascadia subduction zone. If that slips, and given the rumblings up and down the San Andreas Fault area, if that slips, we're possibly looking at some bad events in the northwestern section of the United States.
All right, another break is taking over. It's kind of like Hal the computer. It takes over and we have to just mind it. We'll be back on the other side of this break. More with Dr. Dan Burrish and Dr. Marcia McDowell. get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. My guests this evening are Dr. Dan Burrish and Dr. Marcia McDowell. And before we went away for break, we're talking about the Looking Glass. You know, that whole thing, as you described it, sounds very similar to Stargate as I see it on television, Stargate 1, SG-1. Do they have it essentially correct?
Well, they... Of course, the all of the dialing mechanism and all of that business that they have on the science fiction show is all hokey. This is a scientific instrument. It's not something that looks like what they present. I have seen one of the portals actually open. I'm not talking about a looking glass device here. I'm talking about an actual artificial Stargate device. I've seen it open, and it basically projects an oval of gray mass into the air, which looks flat gray. There's no sparkling or watery appearance to it or anything like that. That's all the hokey business from the science fiction.
That's Hollywood.
Uh-huh. Right. Individuals who go through that barrier must pass immediately within an extremely short period of time if something or if material is passed through, or half of it is left on this side and half of it is left on the destination side. It would slice you right in half. That's the way the metamaterial actually works when the portal is held open.
So you can't stroll into it. You got to jump into it.
It's an immediate jump, which is why human beings have not been encouraged to do so by the groups which have controlled this technology. The human beings have specifically been told not to enter such items. Near the end of the device's use, before they were decommissioned, it was down to experiments for sending information. Because the risk was too high. As we began approaching the time when these devices were actually supposed to begin acting up to destabilize the Earth, they began getting so unstable that items were being destroyed by being sent through them. So they began working, the Star unit and the Sigma unit began working to send information through these devices in any way that they possibly could. This is why the nonsense like this SERPO exchange program, which you may have noted within their so-called, and it's disinformation, it's garbage, within their exchange program, they had a nuclear device with them. Wow. Take a guess what? That's right off from Stargate.
Mm-hmm. Somebody copied that right off of Hollywood.
And these other individuals who are investing their time and their lives into this notion that there's going to be some, you know, giant planet that's going to rove through our solar system, or some say it's already here, but it's playing hide-and-seek behind the sun, like planets do that. This is a matter of physics, folks. They don't do that. We would have already seen this item. There are thousands of amateur astronomers worldwide who would be detecting this item. They would be reporting it forward to the professional astronomers, and alerts would be going out, and as soon as I would hear it, I would be sending alerts out, and so would Marcia.
Absolutely. So you don't buy, neither one of you buys the story of Planet X or Nibiru.
No.
Point me out Planet X. Somebody please point me
right
where Planet X is. We have thousands of people with beautiful telescopic equipment, amateurs and professionals alike, who would be more than happy to turn their scopes out there and take a look for it. Just somebody show me where it is.
What I suggest people to do is go out to our forum. Go to our website that I named at eaglesdisobey.net. Go to our forum. You see the little button up on top. And rove through our forum, and you'll find the information about Planet X. and you'll find information about the two separate camps. We're not just showing one camp, we're showing both. And then look at what, and I have respect for Zachariah Sitchin, he's just wrong. Look at what Zachariah Sitchin's background is, and then look at Dr. Michael Heiser's background and his interpretation of the information concerning Nibiru. And you will quickly learn that the interpretation by Zachariah Sitchin that there's going to be some massive planet that's going to wander through here and save people from having to pay their storage shed bills, that it ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And so, you know, it's nonsense. And these folks that go on and say, oh, I'm listening to the Zetas billions of miles away, and they're saying, no, that's not the Zetas that the lady is hearing. She's hearing other voices, if you get my drift.
Are you suggesting that she's hearing other voices that lithium would silence?
That would certainly help.
I would suggest that it may assist.
Okay.
I have, and I'm not wishing to be rude, but I have actually now seen some of the video. I used to work in the mental health field as a counselor before I entered into the law enforcement and judicial area, being covered over so that nobody would know that I was actually working for the 12. And I have seen this affect. I am not a psychologist. I'm not a clinical psychologist. But I have seen this affect before, and it comes down to, you know, not training. It comes down to common sense.
All right,
to common sense.
All right, let me throw this at you, and get your response on it. 1983, the chief scientist on the IRIS satellite did a press release, actually a press conference. This was published in several newspapers. The one I read it from is the Washington Post. And he said, IRIS has found something out there. We don't know what it is. It is out there, and it is huge.
Well, there are a number of items which are out there, and some of them we could call huge.
Okay.
Whether or, you know, to support a contention, just because you see something out there, there is also something called orbital mechanics. Just because something is out there doesn't mean that it's on its way here.
Fair enough.
Thus far, there has been zero detections by any authoritative scientists who would be reporting this sort of thing, because you know what? Their families live here too.
Mm-hmm.
There have been zero detections of anything inbound of that nature. Now, this does not mean that because of orbital mechanics and physics, that somewhere along the line, we're not going to experience an inbound whatever. Look at Meteor Crater in Arizona. There are craters all over the Earth where we have been struck with very large items, including, if you want to think about Chicxulub, which ultimately our interpretation from the KT Iridium layer indicates that was probably at least involved in the extinction of the dinosaurs. These things happen and they are natural. But there is zero indication of anything like this Planet X character on its way in toward us. Furthermore, there has been a mythological confusion where the so-called Anunnaki, the Sumerian and the Akkadian tales of the Anunnaki, have been confused with the planet of the crossing. They've been added to one another. Now, sometimes things should not be added to one another. This, in this case, is adding apples to oranges. They are separate subjects. And the mythology of the time, I guess the time in which we're living is to add subjects like this together and get 1 + 1 = 3. And unfortunately, for those who are out there spending their lives on this business, they're wasting their lives on it. It's not coming. It's not there. As for the majority of this, and I'll just say it straight, this garbage that's on the internet on several locations, where they say, oh, this is Planet X, here is Nibiru. Well, really, really. That's why it's a fuzzy picture with no authority to it, and nobody can tell you exactly where to look. When you ask exactly where to look, they tell you, well, it's not visible right now, or it's the white aspect of it, or it's the red aspect of it. What it is, it's the bull aspect of it.
The bull aspect of it. All right, we have another break coming up, and then after that we've got a good long time before we have to take another break.
Folks, when we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to open up the telephone lines as we normally do. The telephone number, toll-free throughout the United States and Canada, is 1-800-289-1092. If you live outside of the United States and you live outside of Canada, that number still works. It's just not toll-free, all right? Or you, if you're outside, you can send an email to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. I'll read it on the air and ask our guests to respond to it. We'll be back right after this. Folks, Mother's Day is just a few days away, and if you're like me, Mom is one of the most important people in your life, if not the most important person in your life. Send her a beautiful bouquet of roses from the good folks at 1-800-Flowers. Buy a dozen roses, get a dozen free, plus a premium vase and chocolates
for only, are you ready for this? $34.99. That's a savings of $55. Celebrate mom with three times the love. Send this breathtaking bouquet of two dozen long-stem multicolored roses, free premium glass vase, and a free box of chocolates. Again, that's only $34.99. You gotta act right now. Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Look for the 1-800-Flowers banner and click on it, and you're set to go. Mom's really gonna love this.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Let me urge you, I know you're going to send your mom a gift for Mother's Day. Who wouldn't, right? But let me urge you to support our sponsors. They support the show, and when you support the sponsors, you help us out, all right? All right, my guests, of course, are Dr. Dan Burrish and Dr. Marcia McDowell. And,
folks, we've got a caller on the line already, so let's go to the phone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I just wanted to bounce this off your guest real quick, just because I'm one of those that kind of likes to want to tie something in. It's really odd that the CERN project going on, and Kevin actually had Dr. Kaku on the program one night and talked about what a black hole would actually do at its epicenter and how it would immediately transport it to an alternate, you know, reality in quantum physics, or, you know, it would be a different path that we were on. Who's to say that now that this report comes out that they're saying don't do it, that we don't put ourselves into an alternate timeline where Planet X itself does exist, whether it be another, our, you know, our current Earth in that system or another planet in that solitary clone of ourselves?
Thank you. My perspective on this is this. First, let me talk about CERN. Yes, there are some reports which are due out from what I understand, which are urging caution, and caution is always a good thing when we begin talking about opening up the space fabric. However, I have spoken with a couple physicists and several engineers, and I have been personally told from those moderates, and they are moderates, that it is likely that if anything is opened up, it would be so transitory that it would have no effect upon us here. In fact, I am aware also that there are attempts to legally stop the experiments to open up the to collide these particles and look for, I believe it's the Higgs boson and certain other antimatter elements. However, if we're to speak philosophically here for a moment, do we live in a multiverse scenario where all possibilities exist? Meaning, is the true reality, is the true metaphysics of our cosmos something that where all possibilities exist? I believe that that is the case. I believe that we are in a hollow movement, that we are in a grand, very beautiful thought, a grand, very beautiful holodeck, if you will, speaking in Star Trek parlance, and I am an old Trekkie. However, the likelihood of justifying a misinterpreted mythology by the happenstance of us moving from one spot to another and then looking at the probability of it happening to begin with, in other words, us being sucked into a black hole in an alternate reality, I believe that that is a stretch. Is it possible? Well, probability is the quality or condition of something being likely. I believe that the probability is extremely low. Possible means anything within the mind of God, anything within the mind of human beings that we can understand looking toward the mind of God, possibly. Doubtful, though. But I thank you very much for the question.
Thanks for the call. Good question. You know, my problem with this black hole thing is this. Things do what they do.
And a black hole, regardless of its size, I think will do what a black hole does. And I think it will grow. I don't think you can start one and shut it off. I think it will do what it does.
Well, let me give you my perspective on this here for a moment. Marcia and myself are presently working on a private research project called LOTUS. She and I just completed a presentation called A Peculiar Silicate-Associated Phenomenon at the Beckman Institute Auditorium at Caltech.
Right, we did this. Institute of Technology.
Right, we did this on March 10th of this year, and a video of that will be eventually made available for free for educational purposes to the public through our website. The phenomenon that we're looking at that I've come to call, it was named LOTUS for me, and I have come to call the actual phenomenon itself portals, appear to function as some sort of very low temperature black holes, micro wormholes. They can be stimulated via electrical pressure, and they can be propagated with the use of light pulsing with coherent light, laser. And they also self-collapse.
Yes.
As soon as the stimulation is removed, as soon as the conditions are abated, and very low temperature conditions, meaning you can walk outside, and it's our personal theory that they are opening and closing on their own, and we're getting near actually running some experiments to confirm that and run podcasts so that the public can actually see the confirmation or the disconfirmation of our theories live.
Live, as we do them.
But unless there is a connection formed, if you will, and this is a personal theory now of my own, and you know, theories are like attitudes. Everyone has one.
Mm-hmm.
But the sort of black holes that we're seeing at the centers of the galaxy, of various galaxies, are extremely high energy creatures that I believe are related to the ancient mythology of the pores of Mahavishnu. I believe that we are seeing input and egress, if you will, of energy, and the multiple universes are connected via these designs. So there is a sweating, if you will, between the pores, between the universes. These are grand designs. They are very large, and somewhere along the line, I am expecting that there will be an equilibrium posited where the size, the energy input, is finally deterministic of the ultimate reality of the black hole, its ultimate function. Because we're seeing these items in extremely low energy conditions. We presented, in fact, what they look like in slow motion, high resolution video.
Videograph.
And in raw video at Caltech. And what we're observing is we're observing something that can actually pass information and code the information on our end. And that information is being encoded both with nucleic acids, as well as we have watched protozoans, microscopic organisms that I personally call protoctis, just depending upon, you know, a person's classification system that they like to use. A protozoan form in the outer region of one of these portals and swim off into the medium on our end. And the Earth wasn't destroyed as a result.
Nothing continued on beyond the stimulation. As soon as the stimulation was removed, it collapsed. It self-collapsed.
That's what happens. I truly hope that's what happens. Otherwise, you know, this is one case where I don't want to be right. And, you know, I'm not a physicist.
Neither am I. I'm a microbiologist, and you know, I understand some of the medium level, if you will, physics. But when you start getting off into the higher level physics, you have to start talking with people like Michio Kaku and others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was not too concerned about it. He was on the show here two or three weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And, right. I don't believe it'll happen. I don't. I believe that they may find something. They may ultimately find what they're calling the Higgs boson. But everything I'm hearing from moderates who know the math involved in the experiment say that nothing like that will happen. And if it would begin to happen, it would be so transitory that it would not form any sort of a permanent link between what I would call our universe and another one of the in the multiverses.
All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario. How are
yes,
you doing, Kevin?
Fine.
And hello, Marcia. And hello.
Hello.
Dan, my hello.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And Dan, my question is for you. You were in close contact with the alien J-Rod, if I'm correct in assuming that right?
Yes, he was an extraterrestrial of human lineage. He had a personal name of Kaela, and he was called a J-Rod, which is a numerical figure meaning 15. Yes, sir.
Okay, so he was a part, like a part human, so he was a bit of a hybrid, right?
He was as what we would be considered to the Cro-Magnon. We are descendants of earlier species and subspecies, and he, in fact, was a descendant on another timeline, meaning I am now going into theory here having to do with multiverse, another universe, if you will, which is now being separated off due to the disequilibrium now moving toward equilibrium, the paradox of the time travel.
Okay, right. My question is, how did you guys communicate vocally, like with English, or did you guys use some sort of telepathy, some sort of universal translator or something? Is that how you two communicated?
Well, the communication system was two parts. The first portion of the communication system between we and they was a standardized or a programmed communication system, which was set up by one of the units up north called Sigma. It was a hand sign form, if you will, communication system, kind of like a semaphore and a universal sign language, if you will.
Okay, kind of like how we communicated with the tall whites, right?
For instance, when I was introduced into the Clean Sphere, after I was suited and introduced into the Clean Sphere, I was asked to step in and move over to the right of the Clean Sphere, where there was a projection that was sent into the wall like a teleprompter. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to raise my right hand, and that matched a human figure with a number sequence, which meant friendly to him. Now, this became quite the joke between he and myself, and this now diverges into the second method of communication. They used a telepathic entrainment communication. What he would actually do is he would actually begin thumping me. He had an advantageous section of his brain, which allowed him to send forth electromagnetic waves, kind of like a dolphin uses acoustic waves to communicate with their melon. And what he would do is he would entrain to my thought patterns, where I would hear his voice in my head with my own self-talk voice. And you know what you sound like when you talk to yourself. It would sound like that, but it would be different. I could tell that the cadence was different, the communication was different. And the important thing about this, aside from the fact that it happened, the important thing about this is that within 30 to 40 feet distance from him, the communication would drop off. I could no longer pick up the entrainment because the stimulation from him would become too diluted, if you will, in the atmosphere between he and myself for me to pick up on the entrainment anymore. And that's why a lot of these stories of them talking all of the way from Zeta Reticuli, I'm simply not buying. And it's been my observation that individuals who simply come forth and listen to this negative, we're all going to die catastrophe business, are simply listening to the wrong spiritual cues, if you will.
Okay, Kevin, did you have another question?
No, that'll be all for me tonight.
All right, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092 is the number. It's toll-free, and there's no reason for you not to call it. I pay for the call. It doesn't get any better than that. All right? 1-800-289-1092, or if you're outside of the USA, outside of Canada, you can send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and I'll be glad to read it and get our guests to respond to it, all right, or ask them to. Now, this thing with J-Rod and communication brings up another question for me that I want you to address after we take this call. The question is, just so you can think about it a little bit, if these guys are traveling across the universe and traveling faster than the speed of light, if that's happening, how do they communicate ship to ship? Radio is not fast enough. But let's take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
All right, Dick.
My question to Dan is about MJ-12.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. What year did you say that you were MJ-9?
Yes, I for a short period of time, sir, was seated as the globalist member on the 12. It was a pro tem position, and I can tell you exactly how that occurred if you'd like to hear it. There was a bet between MJ-1 and... Yeah, it was a bet between MJ-1 and MJ-2 that a new member would be found within a short period of time because the old MJ-9 was, in fact, removed from the position. And after and I'll give you the name, the last name of the person who was removed from the position, his last name is Prody. After he was removed from the position, a bet occurred. The person was not found in time, and therefore MJ-1 won the bet. I was then tapped to set as the pro tem member for a very short period of time until I tapped the last member to set in the MJ-9 position, whose last name is Thatcher.
Okay, but what year was that?
That occurred in the 2005 time frame, sir.
Okay.
April, May, June, in that area of 2005.
Okay. Can you tell me the initials of MJ-3 at that time?
I can give you, in fact, I'm allowed to provide, because it's already been out there and nothing has happened as a consequence, the last seated members of the 12. And I will go down the list if you would like me to for you, sir.
That'd be correct. Good.
Very good. The last seated MJ-1, first initial J, last name McConnell. MJ number 2, first initial R, last name Cheney. MJ number 3, first initial P, last name Goss. MJ number 4, first initial, well, it's technically R, but I called him Bobby, I'm sorry, B, last name Inman. MJ number 5, first initial H, last name Kissinger. MJ number 6, first initial Z, last name Brzezinski. MJ number 7, first initial R, last name Myers. MJ number 8, first initial K, last name Tebbett. MJ 9, first initial C, and the last name as mentioned, Thatcher. MJ number 10, first initial A, last name Greenspan. MJ number 11, first initial H, last name Varmus. And MJ number 12, first initial E, last name Kelly. And I have to tell you something. I have sworn to this under penalty of perjury. If you go to our forum by linking from EaglesDisobey.net and go to the first board, which will read Burrish McDowell documents, click on that and it will say the most recent real affidavit. You will see that same list there, sworn under penalty of perjury by me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of strange that you mentioned number 6 there, because I have a list of these, and number 6 is different than I have.
All right, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't speak to the accuracy of your list, though, because with all due respect, I'm not looking at it.
Well, I was a member of AlphaCom, and AlphaCom worked with MJ-12, and there's a couple names that you listed on there that's not correct in the order that you said.
I'm listening to you, sir. Mm-hmm. However, I sat on the unit, and the first individual, MJ number one, McConnell, in fact, was fairly close with me, and I know the names very well, and I thank you for the question.
Okay, but they conflict with what I'm saying here, and, you know, if you did sit on there, they should be right. And
they are correct, sir.
I understand, sir, that you're indicating that there is a conflicting set of names on the list that you have in front of you. And while I can feel for you, I can't reach. I've been there. I've done that. So, I thank you for the question.
You know, Dan, I'm trying to establish your credibility, and your credibility is not too good. The doctor in your name, was that a 3995 doctorate?
3995 what?
From the internet?
No.
No.
Okay. You know, anybody can make documents up, and just by the fact of you telling me who these MJ-12 members are, it looks like to me that maybe you didn't set on the MJ-12 group.
The interesting thing about this whole thing is that at the end of 2005, when I actually retired officially and then was given the final set of orders, I was told to tell the truth of my experience to the public. What I was not told to do is become a preacher. In other words, I was not supposed to convince you of a faith. The problem with the individuals who step forward and they attack and they say they're trying to establish my credibility is that they have not looked at the preponderance of evidence. The preponderance of evidence, which, again, and this is why I suggested that the listeners actually, you know, come in and go over to our forum, there is a link on the forum under the Burrish McDowell documents to a very large document reserve. And that document reserve goes back some of the documents all of the way to my birth. And in fact, as I said, that during the initial biography snippet that Kevin asked me to provide, that my background, my credentials, can in fact be confirmed by writing to Marcia. And under the understanding that you have a physical address, and I say that not tongue-in-cheek, because a number of people who have said that they want this information seem not to be able to provide a physical address to receive it. Under the understanding that a physical address exists, it's able to be obtained. As for your attempts to establish or to vet me, if you will, given the fact that I have a suspicion who you may be, mm-hmm. but I do not know you. That's going to be awful difficult, because if you were, in fact, a member of a unit that you said that you were a member of, you would also know something about compartmentalization. And so doing, if you were a member of another group other than the 12, you, in fact, would not have the list in front of you of the 12. But I very much appreciate your questions.
Okay.
That definitely is wrong, Dan, because we cooperated with MJ-12, and I had a current list of everything. As a matter of fact, I was the point man on this particular team. And Kevin, my BS detector went off when he was talking about these things. So this is just another attempt at trying to bring these bogus facts forward.
Okay, so I take it that you don't buy the story.
Absolutely not.
All
right. And that's perfectly okay. You know, when I started the Eagles Disobey website, it must have been 10 years ago, I made it very clear to people that I was going to be presenting the facts, the things that had been experienced. And you can make up your own mind how you feel about it, what you want to accept, what you want to reject. And you know what? It makes absolutely no never mind, because whether or not you tend to agree or disagree isn't going to change any of the memories, any of the experiences, or any of the facts of our experiences.
And
you're more than welcome to have any disagreement you wish, but it won't
sure,
change
just to
it.
Let your just to let your folks know, I've just pushed a button. And the reason why I pushed the button is those people going to our Burrish McDowell documents should right now be able to view something called fidelity, bravery, and integrity. The individual who called in a few minutes ago, as I'm being indicated right now, is in fact part of a group of individuals who have come forward, and you'll always notice that the individuals who come forward and they use buzzwords like, my BS detector went off, I don't buy this, those individuals that come forward and say that are seldom the individuals who are willing to raise their right hand and place their liberty at stake by swearing under penalty of perjury. Now, I've done that.
I hate to do this. We'll continue.
Very fine.
Yeah, we got a break, and like I said, it's like how the computer... Once this music is over, we are too. All right.
Very cool.
We'll be back right after this break, folks. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it,
You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, welcome back. We are talking with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. And I put on my website that he is enigmatic, controversial, mysterious. All of that is true, and I don't think that he would deny that. And in fact, Marcia, you mentioned that people have polarized over
the
information. I don't think you would deny that in many ways you've become sort of a lightning rod.
Exactly. People asked for a long time for Dan to talk and to explain what he experienced and what he remembers of his experiences up at S4, Area 51. And the minute, the very second that Dan starts to tell his experiences to people, it polarizes them. The people who hear what they want, they hear what they like, and other people, it doesn't gel with what they have a preconceived notion of, and there's very few people in the middle. People either seem to really appreciate Dan's explanation, or there's people who have just moved into a completely vitriolic camp.
The realities of the secret societies and the real DOD ops are such that things are highly compartmentalized. And, for instance, I'm going to go back to the question that you asked, how to communicate ship to ship. Well, as far as I'm aware, they were, in fact, in the transit, able to communicate from point A to point B. The actual way that they did that was not within my compartment. Now, perhaps Mr. AlphaCom would like to come on here, and he'll probably have all of the answers for everybody. But when you have a real background, when you have actually been involved in these projects, you don't have all of the answers. And then when you come forward and you provide what you know, you're immediately attacked then for not having all of the answers. And all that does is it gives the person away who is doing the attacking as not being real. And let me give you an example of this very quickly. For months, this group called the Aviary was attacking me while they were telling everybody about Serpo and about what happened at this gate inside some of the more super-secret dumb bases in the world, the deep operating bases. They were telling everybody about it, and at the same time they were saying, oh, Dan Burrish is nothing but a hoaxer. They're saying, oh, yes, he has to just be a hoaxer. Meanwhile, for several months on a public website, and we even told them that it was on a public website for a major institution, our abstract and our backgrounds, which have been vetted by those who need to know, our abstract was actually published on the Caltech Applied and Computational Mathematics website, and we gave our lecture on March the 10th. But you know what? These folks who know about all of these super secret things, and they like to throw a few letters out here and there, and other people want to go ooh, ah, ooh, they weren't able to find something published on a public website. Now, who's fooling who here?
Point taken. All right, caller, if you will, hang on, and I want to read something here that has come from Italy. One of our listeners writes in, Angelo says, I want to publicly go on record that I feel these two are as bogus as the day is long. Yesterday you had the listeners dissect a hoax, and today we aren't given a chance to do the same. Okay, I'm not going to read the rest of this because Angelo, the rest of it simply is supportive of what you've just said. Okay, so you think they're bogus, and that's okay. I do want to respond to the statement that today you're not given the chance to do the same. Well, what is it you're doing when you write me a flash message? And what is it that I'm doing when I open the phone lines? Absolutely, we're doing what we do every night. I have no idea where you're coming from.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Marianne from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi.
Hi. Hello. I'm calling to that flash message is a little bit of what I think, too. The first hour of this program was absolutely nothing but ongoing science speak that was basically somebody taking a pointer saying, look here, look here, look here, look here, look here. They're not complete sentences. You're flying all over the place. And you knew that this would be controversial, and yet the telephone lines aren't open for the first hour.
I never open them in the first hour when I have a guest.
I understand that. I'm a frequent listener.
I know that.
But this is not your normal guest.
Well, none of our guests are normal.
Thank you.
Number two, it is my opinion. Please do not interrupt me. You consistently do that.
We consistently interrupt you?
It is my opinion that you show grave disrespect to the callers of this program. You are here to defend who you are and what your claims are. You keep leading us to a site that doesn't even exist. I have
www.eaglesdisobey.net exists.
Are you interrupting me again?
No, we're answering your question, ma'am. We're answering your question, ma'am.
There was no question, Marcia.
Okay, well, you said the site doesn't exist. And he says that it does exist.
I'm right online, and it isn't on my computer.
Are you at, what? Give the address again. Let's make sure
it's correct. The address is http://www.eaglesdisobey.net. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking
at
it, Expedia.
We have our statistics, as is showing in Webalizer, is that we have over a million hits on our... Ma'am, if please, I didn't interrupt you. We have over a million hits per every 3 months to our website. I'm looking at our website as I speak.
What did that have to do with right now? What did that fact have to do with right now?
Well,
this is how you get yourself into trouble.
Well, Expedia, hold on, time out just a second. Let's be fair. You questioned whether the website exists, and they have said it does. They gave the address again, and I'm looking at it. It exists.
All right, that site is up now. It has not been on. And I will tell you that I have received a message from Angelo as well, and it was not seen in Italy either.
Well, I don't know. All I can tell you is I'm looking at it.
Well, we've got, let me go over to our forum here for a second, which actually links to eaglesdisobey.net. And let me get up the forum statistics here very quickly.
While you're looking that
I
up,
have,
I would
ma'am,
also
ma'am,
like
if you
know.
May, it, ma'am, if you may, I
of
have a number of 390 total members on the Eagles Disobey forum, which links directly from our website, and we do not advertise out in the in the public per se.
Oh, no.
And so the people find the Eagles Disobey forum by going to the Eagles Disobey website. Is there something that I can assist you with, ma'am?
My experience was the site was down. That was my experience.
Well,
so you're all
right. Expedia, it very well could be.
Yes.
That,
I'm glad it's
okay,
corrected
listen,
for you.
Listen, time out. It very well could be that at the time you tried to get on, there were so many people trying to get on that it was down for you. That happens.
That is my point.
It's very popular.
Ma'am?
My final question is, are these credentials, these academic credentials that we need to write to Marcia for, why are they not online publicly?
It is a very private institution, and they do not put themselves on the internet.
Ma'am, let me explain, ma'am, if you will, you've asked the question, and I appreciate, ma'am. Ma'am, you've asked the question. I appreciate your question, and I will respond if you will allow me a moment to respond.
What did she answer me? I'm asking you. I did not hear her.
I said that it's a very private institution who does not have or choose to engage in internet presence. They do everything by traditional mail.
And that leaves you unable to post this credential yourself.
Okay, so
we're not left unable to do anything ourselves. May I respond to this?
Mm-hmm.
We're not unable to post anything ourselves. My background and the background concerning the State University of New York at Stony Brook is well known and is probably well known given the amount of anger that at least I may be wrong, but the amount of anger that I am perceiving from somebody that I do not believe that I know. However, we're not left unable to do anything. What we have done is we have actually been careful in response to the amount of anger which has come forward at us once I came out into the public. And in fact, I don't know if the lady caller is still on the phone, but it is the very type of vitriol, the very type of anger is the reason why we have become careful with our backgrounds and careful with our information. And the reason being is, I went for a year to the St. Patrick's Seminary. One of the gentlemen who lives in this type of anger as well that we've experienced actually called St. Patrick's Seminary and started asking questions about what I used to pray while I was in formation, because I was in formation for almost a year for the priesthood, what I used to pray. These individuals seemingly have no boundary of common respect or decency or simple human reciprocity that I'm willing to provide others, yet we are attacked with the type of anger that you know, we've been witnessing here. And however, whomever the lady caller is, all I can say is God bless you and thank you.
Okay, I hate to do it, but break is taking over, and we'll continue. I told you this would be controversial.
ABC, you and me, the time is right.
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, we are back. I told you this would be controversial, and I have to tell you that it's about to become more controversial because of my comments, okay? I find that it's really interesting that because I changed the format for one show last night, you expect that I'll do it simply because you disagree with a guest. You're wasting expects, my friend. You know, I've got two flash messages that say the same thing. I've got the last telephone call. And I know that represents a number of people, but I have to tell you, you're wasting expects. We do this show according to a format that I have crafted over the years very, very carefully. And it's why this show is so, so successful. Now, we listen to the guests. We don't always agree with them. But when we have guests on that you agree with, you don't demand that I open the phone lines, and you don't scorch me because I didn't open the phone lines in the first hour. Now you do? What a waste of time. What a waste of gray matter. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yeah, Brent.
Dr. Babich. I think it's
yes, sir.
Burge.
Yeah. I actually had several questions. I'm going to boil it down to one, but in all fairness, I will say that your website is eagles_disobey.net.
No.
No, it's certainly
not. No, it's one word, eaglesdisobey.net. It's only one word. There is no underscore.
I'm looking at it. Believe me, it's up.
Okay. But, my question is, you said you initially got involved with this stuff when you were in college.
Yes, sir.
Why did they contact you?
Well, that's a very good question, and thank you very much. The true nature, the true reason behind it, I am not personally certain. I have been told that because I am, and again, if you go to the website, you actually look at the material that's there, you're going to see stuff all the way back from my childhood. I developed, after an experience in 1973, a potential, if you will, for looking at histopathology slides. I was taken under the wing, confirmed. You can see the photographs of these people as we were hugging each other 27 years later. Taken under the wing of the chief pathologist at Long Beach Memorial Medical Center, whose name was Dr. James Reynolds. Dr. Reynolds is now retired. However, you can see a photograph of he and I at our reunion, if you will.
We're going to have to keep this a little bit short unless you will agree. If you agree, we can go over time a few minutes.
The reason why I was contacted is they wanted to be a member of the program. I was contacted in 1986 while I was working inside of a laboratory for Dr. Bert Bell Barbero at UNLV. And they wanted another individual on board with the team. They approach different individuals for whom that they feel have aptitude. And for whatever reason, they felt that I had aptitude, and so they recruited me.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the call. All right, is it okay with you if we go a minute or two over?
Oh, sure. Of course.
Fine with me.
All right.
It's only time.
Okay. The reason is we have some flash messages that we haven't gotten to, and I want to be sure that we do. We've got one, let's see, this is from Larry. He says, what is it that is heating up our solar system?
That is the energy within the so-called, and it's been called many things, but the so-called photon belt, the energy in which our sun, our solar system, is presently bobbing into.
We will be in that energy zone until at least 2016. That is what's actually causing our solar system to become more energetic and us seeing responses on other planets such as Mars. That's what's going on.
All right. This one from Australia, this is from Rob. It says, what is the name of the group that took over from Majestic? And I take your point about Planet X, but are we in a binary solar system?
I do not believe that we're presently in a binary solar system. However, there are speculations that perhaps our solar system originated as a binary. And I thank you for the question relative to the new group. However, I was personally threatened and given the nature of some of the vitriol that I think we've witnessed this evening, we can see why. I was personally threatened, though, by agents from the new group that if I name this new group, that they were going to depart my gray matter from my cranium. In other words, they were going to shoot me. And in fact, I was under such a threat when I appeared on March the 1st in Laughlin at the IUFOC in Laughlin and was interviewed by Rob Simone. It was so bad that Rob Simone's staff was actually witness to people in suits coming through and doing scans in the back of the stage. Before I went on stage, these were people from our group making sure that there was no bomb placed.
Yeah, they actually pulled me aside because they were really freaked out by some of the suits
I know
that came through.
I know the name of the new group, but given the amount of contracts that are involved within the military complex, given the amount of patents which are pending, they have threatened me that if I, in fact, mention the name of the new group, which I do know, but if I mention the name of the new group, they're going to kill me.
So we're just
but
not
I thank
going
you for
there.
The question.
Yeah.
Thank you for the
I
question.
I understand that. All right. This one is from Carl in Australia, and it says, what has become of J-Rod? Has there been any effect on that entity due to the fact that contemporary humans are changing our path through history? Has that particular J-Rod remained in our reality, or did he vanish?
That's an absolutely fabulous particular question.
That particular J-Rod, Kyla, was sent home at the end of 2003. He returned to his time, ostensibly to his universe, which I hope has now separated from our own. I thank you for the question, and I sincerely thank you, because it was because of his love for his son that he wished to return to his own time and his own world, no matter what happened. He didn't even know what would happen during the time of transition in which we're now living. And he wanted to return to his son to be back there with his boy. And if that doesn't speak to a human heart, nothing does.
All right, this one from Jeff. This is from Tasmania. And he says, gee, I've been looking at the site since the show started.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, man. And rock on in Tasmania.
Oh, yeah.
You know
how to party.
I expressed a different view than you have about the creation of these black holes.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't respond angrily to me. I didn't express it angrily to you. I worry about a world where people do not know how to disagree and still be friendly.
I do too. And this is a flashpoint right now in our world, Kevin, because of the divisions which are being emplaced by radicalism of all kinds, whether it be radicalism through various religions, whether it be philosophies, or whether it be the embracing of anger. And that's something that we need, I believe, and this is my belief, my perspective, that we need to do as a species is to move beyond that type of anger that we've witnessed. And that is what the ultimate message is, and possibly, and I've joked about it, calling it the Burrish equilibrium, that the amount of vitriol and virulence that one faces is directly proportional to the amount of truth that one is telling, that we are facing these type of responses, and all we are telling people, this is all that we're truly telling people. We're giving you an accurate account of the experience of my past and what we were involved with and what I was involved in. But all we're telling people to do is to pray for
Think about whatever is in your philosophy, however you deal with it, meditate on it, unity for humanity. That's all we've asked people to do, and you've seen some of the responses. That's all we ask people to do.
Well, it does concern me, and I want to say again to all of our listeners, I love you and I respect you.
Yes.
On the other hand, you've got to understand that there's something seriously wrong with the idea that if you agree with the guest, you're quite content to sit and listen for an hour before I open the telephones. If you disagree, then you're seriously pissed off with me because I didn't open the phones till the second hour. I never do, unless we have an open line show. And, you know, there's something seriously wrong with where you sit intellectually and perhaps even emotionally and spiritually. When you can't listen to someone who is saying something that's different from what you think or what you believe, you can't even listen to it without boiling over, there's something seriously wrong there. There's something that needs fixing.
And what I would like to say, Kevin, is I want to thank all of the callers, those who were positive, the people who sent you emails, all of the callers who were negative, for standing up and calling in and saying what they believe. I am not in the belief game. I'm simply here telling you what I know to be true, and I want to tell all of them, especially the ones who exhibited anger toward us or anything of any negative nature, I love you and I respect you.
Yeah, and so do I. And I'm not angry that you were angry, folks.
No.
But I'm concerned. How can we ever come to a point where we are comfortable with saying, I know this to be true, or I know this to not be true? How can you do that if you don't listen? If you're not willing to hear? All right, I want to thank our guest, Dr. Dan Burish, and I'm probably murdering your name. I murder English anyway with my Texas accent. My Texas accent is so bad, it's so thick, that even when I speak Serbian, a guy in Belgrade walks into a bar where I'm speaking Serbian and says, Texas, yes?
Kevin, like I've said many times before, you can call me whatever you like as long as I'm not called late for dinner.
I hear you. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment. And again, I want to thank you so much for being with us. And as I warned you before the show, you know, we talked about the fact that you are a controversial figure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I warned you before the show that I do not screen the telephone calls, and that whatever happens, happens.
That's right, and I in that personal phone call said to you good, and I preferred it that way because I don't like things which are either set up positive or set up negative. I just like honesty.
I hear you. All right, just stay on the line with me a moment. Folks, we've gone just a little bit over time, but the time has come for me to say, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and I may have a few more of those now, I don't know. But you can call me whatever you want, just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow. So long, everybody.